Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, verses 15 through 17. So I'll read the first two verses, and then together we'll chant the Sanskrit for text 17. Samudra pitakoshaya vashasi samupaharat varuna sarjam vajayantim madhuna matasaptadam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supplied the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garment. The predominating deity of water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by six-legged bumblebees drunken with honey. Purport. When bathing the deity in the Abhishek ceremony with various liquids such as milk, honey, yogurt, ghee, cow dung, and cow urine, it is customary to supply yellow garments. In this way, the Abhishek ceremony for the Goddess of Fortune was performed according to the regular Vedic principles. Text 16. Bhushani vichitarani vishvakarma pajapati haram sarasvati padmam ajo nagas chakundale. Translation. Vishvakarma, one of the Prajapatis, supplied varieties of decorated ornaments. The goddess of learning, Saraswati, supplied a necklace. Lord Brahma supplied a lotus flower. And the inhabitants of Nagaloka supplied earrings. Text 17. Tata Krita Svastyayana Utpalashrijam Nadat Dvirepam Paregriha Panina Chachala Vaktram Sukapola Kundalam Savridhasam Dadhati Sushobhanam Tatakritasvastyayanot Palashrajam. Tatad vipreham parihrigyapadina Chanchala Vaktram Sukapola Kundalam Saridahasam Tatati Shushobhanam Tatakrita Svastyaya Utpalashrajam Nadad Dvire Pamparigriya Panina Chanchala Vaktram Sukapala Kundalam Savidhasam Dadati Shushobhanam. Next, please.
Thank you.
Vidahasam datati shushobhanam Tata kritasvas yayanat palashajam Eham parigriha pannina Chanchala vaktram sukapola pandalam Savindhahasam datati shushobhanam Tata kritasvaya yanot palashrajam Tadandvere pamparigriya pannina Chanchala vaktram sukapola kundalam Savindahasam datati shushobhanam Tata kritastva yayanot palashrijam Mataji's, please. Tata krisvastya yat palashrajam Dabdureham parakrita pamina Chanchala vaktram sukapola kandalam Savindahasam datati shushobhanam Tata thereafter kritasvastya yana being worshipped regularly by all auspicious ritualistic ceremonies utpalashrajam a garland of lotuses nadhat humming tirepam surrounded by bumblebees parigriya capturing panina by the hand chanchala went on vaktram face sukapola kundalam her cheeks decorated with earrings savridhahasam smiling with shyness. Dadati, expanding. Sushobhanam, her natural beauty. Translation. Thereafter, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, having been properly celebrated with an auspicious ritualistic ceremony, began moving about. Holding in her hand a garland of lotus flowers, which were surrounded by humming bumblebees. Smiling with shyness, her cheeks decorated by her earrings, she looked extremely beautiful. Purport. The goddess of fortune, Mother Lakshmi, accepted the ocean of milk as her father, but she perpetually rests on the bosom of Lord Narayan. She offers benedictions even to Lord Brahma and other living entities in this material world. Yet she is transcendental to all material qualities. Although she appeared to have been born of the ocean of milk, she immediately resorted to her eternal place on the bosom of Lord Narayan. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Varenta Swamini Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtacha Desha Tarane Omagena temadanda shajanan janan shalakaya chakshuram militam jainatasma shri gurave namaha mukam karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripatam aham bande shingurum dinataranam. So Srila Prabhupada described when one engages in devotional service, one becomes situated in his constitutional position of glory. So I feel very extremely fortunate to be in the presence of so many Vaishnavas who are situated in that position of constitutional glory in the service of Sri Sri Radha Madhava, in the service of Sri Panchatattva, in the service of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And I actually feel like a minute insect in the presence of an assembly of regal elephants, and I'm looking up at you. And I'm praying that you may cast a favorable glance upon me, that the Lord within your heart might inspire the Lord within my heart to say a few words of value to you. So, Hare Krishna. So in the last 2 days, both Chandramali Maharaj and His Holiness Jayadwaita Maharaj were discussing the benedictions and the glory of Lakshmi. And so I'd like to continue that theme. And I thought it was rather auspicious omen to bookmark. It's a blown up 100-rupee note. So Lakshmi is approached for different things by different individuals. And Chandramukha Maharaj, he was describing yesterday how we are after this wealth, but in this age, all we get is a piece of paper. You get some rupee notes. And it's even evolved now. You don't even get a piece of paper. There's something called a Bitcoin, which is, I don't know what that is. It's just a hope that maybe you have some money. So what is the value of that wealth? So real wealth is actually measured in terms of gold. We have currencies that are based on gold. And we had this experience about 10 years ago. We were in South Africa, and the devotees took us to tour a gold mine. And a part of that tour, they took us to a room where there was a gold brick, a big gold brick. And they said anyone who could lift that brick with one hand could walk out with it. And so in that room, there was two muscular men holding pistols, and there was a lineup of people there, like the princes trying to lift the bow to get Sita. And I have to admit, I fell into illusion in the line, waiting for my turn. I thought I would somehow get some mystic power and be able to lift up the brick. But my false pride got smashed. So, real wealth is something different. There was a very, next door in Sri Panchatattva's Kirtan Hall, there's a very beautiful quote by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and I believe it was one of his last things he said. And he said that we do not want a life of poverty in this world which is without our real wealth, which is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Said, we don't want a life of poverty. So that life of poverty, even if you have all wealth in this material world, if it's devoid of the association of Vaishnavas and the opportunity to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, that life is dharma svanustitapum sam vishvaksena katasu ya nat pariyajati ratyam shrama eva hi kevalam. It's described in the Bhagavatam as a useless labor. The Bhagavatam is even describing that even if we execute all of our duties perfectly according to varna and ashram, these duties, if it doesn't provoke this heartfelt attraction to hear about Krishna, we've missed the entire point. So the greatest blessing of Lord Lakshmi is that we can actually have this taste for hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord. It is such a powerful thing. Srila Prabhupada described, if you in the introduction to this famous record that was recorded, the devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, and he's describing how this sound vibration, it's not something of this material world. It's not a sound vibration of this material, but it's a transcendental vibration that's imported from the spiritual realm, which has very immense spiritual potencies. Nama Chintamani Krishna, it's a desire stone. It's actually a desire stone that can fulfill all desires. So it is such a powerful thing. Recently we had a visit where I live at Saranagati from a devotee who's a doctor. And he's taken as his mission in life to do scientific research on the benefits of chanting Hare Krishna. And he sees that as immense opportunity to convince people to take to chanting Hare Krishna. And it's quite interesting, the research he's done. And he did a pilot study. And in this pilot study, he had two groups of, they were all volunteers. And the prerequisite to participate was you had to never have heard the holy name and know nothing about the holy name of Krishna and know nothing about the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Nothing. So that was the stipulation. And you would have to chant a mantra for, I believe it was for 1 month, for 30 minutes a day. And you would have to chant with rapt attention, hearing every syllable of that mantra. And so he had two groups. One group with a placebo, which was some mantra that he made up, and one group with the Hare Krishna mantra. So his research is in the field of the heart. And the heart is a very amazing organ. Scientists understand that actually there's more impulses coming from the heart to the brain than from the brain to the heart. The heart, they understand, it's a very mysterious organ. We chant every morning, Devya Gyana Hridi Prakasito, this song by Narottam Das Thakur, how by the mercy of the Guru, from within our heart, we get this Devya Gyana, this spiritual knowledge. It doesn't really come from our cerebral cortex, but it's actually coming from this place within our heart. And so in his research, this devotee Gopal, he's understood that there's different frequencies of the heart, and some of these frequencies are related to health, proper psychological and physical health. And he found that when one chants attentively, these very healthy aspects of the heart become amplified. So he had these two test groups, and he would regularly test them. How was their hearts functioning? And those with the placebo group, they had maybe some slight improvement by the placebo effect or some degradation in the health of their heart. And for those who were chanting, he found these fields of energy actually opened up in the heart. They became much more receptive. And after the study was completed, he did some study with them, asking them different questionnaires. And he found that those who chanted this Hare Krishna mantra, attentively hearing every syllable, at least 30 minutes a day for 1 month, their appreciation for nature increased. Their sense of empathy and compassion increased. So it was quite a remarkable study. And in that study, one of the subjects was a millionaire. So here's a man who, anything he wants, he can have. He's $1 million. And after the study, he said, money cannot purchase what I obtained by chanting that mantra. Money cannot purchase that. Money cannot purchase that. So, hearing that myself, it made me realize what a precious thing we have in this holy name. Sometimes it's very easy to take things for granted. We have something very precious and take it for granted. And here we see how non-devotees, practically they're chanting like Ajmil. They're not committing offense because they didn't know how to make offenses. They're chanting with no material purpose. They weren't getting paid. They were just chanting and hearing that sound vibration. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. They attained very immense benefit. They attained an immense benefit by chanting. So what to speak, we have the opportunity to chant unlimitedly in association of devotees, to chant japa. It's such a wonderful thing. So what a treasure that is. So there's so many different kinds of precious things in this world. Even spiritually, there's some very precious things, some antiquities. Like you can go to the Yogapith, and sometimes if you're fortunate, Jagannath Mishra's household deity at Hoksaja Vishnu, they'll bring it out and bring it up really close, and you can have darshan of that deity. You feel very blessed to be able to see that. Or if in Jagannath Puri, you go to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and they have one of his pots. They have a pot that was used by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and the pujari will actually put that on your head. Or if you go to the Gambhira room, actually the shoes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are in the Gambhira room. Many years ago, they used to have them out in the room where you could take darshan, you could actually touch them. Now they're in the Gambhira, locked doors, glass, you can't really go inside, but such a precious thing. So I was thinking, just imagine if the pujari at the Gambhira room said, here are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shoes that he wore 500 years ago. Can you take care of them? Would anyone like to do that? Would you like to take care of them? Would you like to take care of those shoes, have them in your home, to take possession and guard and protect? Wouldn't that be a wonderful service? That would be such a powerful thing. And then if we can expand that further, there's actually a very most precious gem that's available in this age. And Shivaram Maharaj describes in his Raja Mahima about the glories of the holy name, a compilation from the works of many different acharyas. And he describes the jewelry that Srimati Radharani wears. And she likes to wear things that remind her of Krishna. And one thing she wears, it's a garland of just simple seeds that was sown by Krishna. So that's such a valuable thing to her. And then she wears diamonds. So all the ladies usually like diamonds. I was thinking, why would Radharani like diamonds? Why diamonds? And then I recall reading that diamonds, actually it was an article on something called the Hope Diamond. It's one of the largest diamonds in the world that was stolen by the British Raj and taken to England. And it came off a Ram deity. And this article was saying that this is the Hope Diamond is very unusual because most diamonds, if you subject them to bright light and put them in the dark, they will emanate blue light. So that's probably why Radharani likes diamonds. But this Hope Diamond, which came from the Ram deity, if you expose it to bright light, put it in the dark, it emanates green light. So Radharani, she likes diamonds. But it said her her most treasured gem that she values the most is the vibration of the name of Krishna that's eternally in her throat. That's the most valuable thing to Radharani, is the name of Krishna within her throat. And by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the disciple succession, we all have the opportunity to actually hold, to embrace that most valuable gem of the holy name. It is such a precious thing, such a wonderful thing, something so much desirable. And we understand, as Srila Prabhupada said, the chanting of Hare Krishna is the panacea for all the material problems and all diseases, even Prabhupada said. The panacea for all material problems. But at least for myself, I find it's very hard to chant attentively, day after day, month after month, year after year. It's very easy to take for granted. My mind is continually thinking of things in the past that I have, they're gone. Why am I thinking of those things? Or I'm chanting, my mind is thinking of things in the future that I have no control over. So by the influence of passion and ignorance, I'm being robbed of that opportunity to associate with the holy name. Prabhupada, he was once questioned by a devotee that, he said, Prabhupada, sometimes devotees, they have a hard time chanting because of the mind. And Prabhupada said, it is not a question of the mind. He said, you simply chant and hear. Simply chant and hear. It's something so simple, yet so immensely profound that we simply have to chant and hear that holy name. Yato yato nischalati manas chintalamas diram tatas tato niyam yatat hatmani eva vasham naya. Krishna explains this principle of yoga in Bhagavad Gita, that from whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should control it and bring it back under the control of the self. So the self is the eternal servant of Krishna. That we simply want to chant that holy name and beg for service, beg for the service of the Lord through the holy name. Simply chant and hear. And our mind may wander so many places, we simply bring it back under control. I had one experience that I think profoundly affected the way I chant japa, because I have a very restless mind. Palm reader, he read my palm once, and he said, "Your mind moves very fast." And my mind is always, it's all over the place. He said, "Your mind moves very fast." So, for me, nothing actually works for controlling my mind. Standing, sitting straight, my mind is always all over the place. But in 1977, we had the fortune of being in Vrindavan during Srila Prabhupada's concluding pastimes. And I actually spent a great deal of time in Srila Prabhupada's room at that period. And one afternoon, it was about 2-3 days before Prabhupada left the planet, and there was very few devotees who were there at that time in Prabhupada's room. I was actually surprised how few devotees were there. And so I was in Prabhupada's room, we would do kirtan, and one afternoon, one devotee came in with a harmonium, accompanied by another devotee, and he began to chant Brahma Samhita, and it was the most melodious celestial sound I'd ever heard. And at that time, Prabhupada said, "I just want japa." And I was surprised, the devotee who was chanting on the harmonium, he walked out of the room. So I thought, if Prabhupada wants japa, I'll chant japa. So I stayed in Prabhupada's room for several days. I used to bathe Lalita and Vishaka on the morning, then I'd go in Prabhupada's room, and I would literally chant japa in Prabhupada's room until late in the evening when I was falling asleep standing up, because I understood that's something that was Prabhupada very much wanted that at that point in his life. He just wanted to hear us chanting the holy name. So for me, the only thing that works for controlling my mind, if I remember that I'm doing this for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, that's my only hope and solace for chanting the holy name. And we all are chanting that holy name on the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the disciple succession, from Srila Prabhupada, from Srila Prabhupada's representatives. And that actually gives great pleasure to Srila Prabhupada. So it is such an important thing. And again, that's the ultimate blessing of Lakshmi, that we have this opportunity to engage in devotional service and hear and chant the glories of the holy name. There's another wonderful quote also in the kirtan hall next door, in which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj says that I'm going to read it exactly. I have it here. Said, "The holy name is more compassionate than the Lord of the name himself. If one takes shelter of the name, then it unravels all these philosophical complexities." So it is such an important thing. Even our endeavor to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, we need to read and study and try to understand Prabhupada's books. But a key to that understanding is actually our endeavor to chant very purely and with devotion. There's this mythical thing called the philosopher's stone. The philosopher's stone. Sometimes it's said it's like a touchstone. It turns everything to gold. So this philosopher's stone is actually the holy name of the Lord. Because by that holy name, we come in contact with Krishna, and all the complexities that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura Maharaj, they will be revealed to us in time by our pure chanting. So it is such an important thing. So we are so fortunate to have the opportunity to hear and chant the holy name together, and in this way receive this, the ultimate benediction of Mother Lakshmi. And in the last few days, I was also recalling there's a purport in fourth canto, first chapter, I think it's text 6, where Srila Prabhupada, he describes another place where Lakshmi sometimes manifests. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada describes when husband and wife live together peacefully, the husband satisfied with the wife, and the wife is satisfied with the husband, Srila Prabhupada said, Lakshmi will be present. He actually said material opulence will be present. And I was always curious about that because I've been married for almost 47 years. And my wife and I never really fight. We've had challenges and problems that we just talked about and worked out, but never really fought. But I never became wealthy. We never had wealth. But my wife, she was talking to someone once, and she said, on this point, she said, we never had wealth. She said, but we always had what we needed. And it didn't always come in the form of money. It didn't always come in the form of Lakshmi. But we always had what we needed. And so I could understand from that that the benediction of Lakshmi is if you can be satisfied in your situation, you can be happy and peaceful. And especially for grihasthas, that is a very important thing because sometimes we see grihasthas. My wife and I work with an initiative to help grihasthas stabilize grihastha ashram. There's many problems in grihastha ashram, family strife, even divorce. But it's very important that we have to see that Lakshmi is present in each and every individual grihastha ashram within our society. Just like what's the community, Gornagara, next behind the temple. There's all these apartments that have shot up over the years. And apparently I've heard from my godbrother, Goshtakur Prabhu, that there's one apartment, it's leaning over. And it's, I don't know what its status is now, but he's telling me it's almost touching the building next door. So obviously something was wrong with the foundation. Some mistake was made in the foundation of that building. And in a similar way, each and every individual grihastha ashram is like a building block, a foundational building block in a structure. And that structure is actually Varnashram. Srila Prabhupada very much wanted Varnashram. But if we don't really endeavor to make our individual ashrams, whether grihastha or brahmachari, sannyas, vanaprasa, if we don't endeavor to make those fully Krishna conscious so that Lakshmi is pleased to reside in our ashram and bless us in those ways, then especially the grihastha ashram, then those foundational building blocks, if they're crumbling, how will you ever erect a structure of Varnashram on top of that? It's not going to be possible. So therefore, it's actually the duty of Prabhupada. He said, your duty is to be happy. We have a duty to become happy. So how do we do that? How do grihasthas become happy? And sometimes there's so many questions and problems. And again, the essence is, it's chanting Hare Krishna. It lies in simply pure chanting. It lies in the peacefulness of Bhoktaram Yagnatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Sriram Sarvabhutanam, Gyatvamam Shantam Richati. Seeing that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. He's our well-wisher. He's the owner of everything. So we hear that, but sometimes that's difficult to actually apply in our lives, to fully imbibe in our hearts. And I'd actually like to also read another wonderful thing that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj wrote, which answers these questions. Let's take me a second to find it. And he wrote this as an article for the Harmonist magazine. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura Maharaj is saying, the cardinal principle of the Grihastha Ashram is that no one may be the owner of any property or service of another. Everyone is only a servant whose activities are ever in the service of the Lord. And this is very interesting. It's a bit of a paradox. Marrying and giving in marriage do not give rise to any rights of a master, either to the husband or the wife. Marrying and giving in marriage do not give rise to any rights of a master, either to the husband or to the wife. Men and women are joined in wedlock for the purpose of serving each other in the performance of joint service to Krishna. And this is also very interesting, a big paradox. They choose for their partners only such persons who serve God better than themselves. What does that mean? They choose for their partners only such persons who serve God better than themselves. How are you going to find someone who's more advanced in devotional service than you, and how are they going to find someone that's more advanced than them? It's like an impossible paradox. But the paradox is unraveled if we understand Trinadupi Sanichena, Tavarivasa Hishina, Amanina Manina Kirtani Asadahari. If we become very humble, we have this mutual sense of humility and respect, then it's possible to have this understanding. Then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, neither the husband nor the wife should claim the services of his or her partner on their own account. Both of them are only to offer their services if and when their partner is pleased to permit them to share their service of Hari. None of them can force their partners to serve them. And then the essence is described here. This system of household discipline has its roots in the joint worship of the household deity by all members of the household. So we see Krishna as the boss of the home. They were both servants of Krishna and meant to cooperate in the service of the household deity. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj says, the reason why the guru does not ordinarily ask any person to enter the state of wedlock is that it is very rare to find anyone in this world who is willing to regard his or her wife or husband as worthy of his or her unconditional services. This is, however, exactly the only relationship between husband and wife that alone can be sanctioned by the guru. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj has set the bar very high. He set a very high standard of pure devotion for marriage. It's a very exalted state of consciousness that one could actually imbibe those qualities. It's something that we should understand. Actually, I think Srila Prabhupada, actually, he must have read this at some point because he sent something in a conversation with Hayagriva Prabhu, and it's recorded in the folio. And it's almost like a sutra of what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had said in his article. And Srila Prabhupada, he said, but if the woman does not agree with the man, and the man treats the woman as his servant, that is not good. The man should give the woman all protection, and the woman should give all service to the man. That is ideal life, family life, conceived in the Vedic way of life. So again, another paradox. We know the wife is supposed to serve the husband, she should be submissive, but then Prabhupada is saying if the husband thinks the wife is a servant, that's not good. So again, how do we resolve this? And the resolution is if we actually understand that our lives are actually meant to be based on bhakti, on loving devotion. And again, I think it was Jayadvaita Maharaj was saying that we tend to see everything around us as objects for us to enjoy. I see my home as an, my object. My wife is an object of enjoyment. Everything as objects for us. That's very impersonal. But if we could have the vision of bhakti, we could see that actually by the grace of the Lord, by the grace of Lakshmi Narayan, we've been given so much wonderful facility to serve the Supreme Lord. And with that mood of respect and reverence, we could begin to cultivate that attitude, that mood of pure bhakti. And that's, again, that's, as Prabhupada said, that chanting Hare Krishna is the panacea for all material miseries, all material problems, that chanting. If we could chant purely and begin to unravel these mysteries of devotional service, or what it actually means. I was just reading a very wonderful book compiled by Sitala, the wife of Hari Sari, about Narottam Das Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada describes, there's a quote where Srila Prabhupada is describing Narottam Das Thakur. And he said, "Now, if one hears the voices, the words of Narottam Das Thakur, they will act like a thunderbolt in the heart. They will act like a thunderbolt in the heart." And that book is actually very, very gripping and very moving. It's very much touching to the heart, and it's the kind of thing we all need. And I think that's something I aspire for, and I think we all aspire for, is trying to learn to imbibe, understand Krishna consciousness based on realizations from our heart. Something very profound and powerful. And like Papa said, like a thunderbolt. One of my first experiences, was actually my Vartmana Padarksha guru. His name was Charan. He'd just been initiated. It's 1973. I've been reading all kinds of philosophy. My wife were dabbling in Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, all these impersonal things. And somehow we found two of Srila Prabhupada's books in a library. Krishna book and Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we began reading those, and they were so attractive. But I had many questions, doubts. I was attracted, very much attached to impersonalism, and Prabhupada would continually be smashing this impersonalism. And it was actually painful reading Prabhupada's books for me. I'd have to put the book away and think, I'm never going to read this again. And then I'd be drawn. And I realized I actually had to meet a devotee to clear these doubts I had. So I'm in Victoria, a city in Western Canada, on the street one day. I'm crossing an intersection, and coming towards me, there's two devotees, and they put some incense in my hand. I kept walking the other way, and then they crossed the street to the other side. My heart just started pounding, because I wanted to meet these people. So I had to wait for the light to change, and I ran after them, and I caught up with these two devotees, Simha and Pundarikaksha. And I tried to ask them some questions, and they said, "I'm sorry, we can't talk to you. We're going to the park for a prasadam." They wouldn't talk to me. I was devastated. I said, "Oh, go down the street. There's some more devotees down the street. You'll find someone." So frantically, I found another brahmachari standing on the street corner. I tried to ask him some questions. He gave me a book, Elevation to Krishna. He said, "This will answer all your questions." Prabhupada was initiating after 3 months in those days. And we didn't know a lot. So he gave me this book. I gave him everything in my wallet, $20. I gave him the whole thing. And I tried to ask him some questions. And he didn't really know much. He couldn't really answer my questions. And then he said to me, I can still remember these words. He said, "My Brahman said I shouldn't talk to anyone for more than 2 minutes. And he began walking away. I couldn't believe this was happening. And but at that point, I had a very mystical kind of experience. Like Prabhupada said, the words of Narottam Das Thakur were like a thunderbolt in the heart. And if you have ever been very close to a thunderbolt, it's just this indescribable noise. And after that thunderbolt, everything is still. Everything is quiet. And at that moment, when that brahmachari was leaving, it was as though I was hit by a thunderbolt. And everything became still. And I could still, within my mind, see He had red hair, he had a red sikha, it was blowing in the wind, and his robes were kind of blowing in the wind, and he's walking away. And Krishna gave me this realization that he was the representative of a very great man. Just, it was, for me, a thunderbolt. It was like an amazing thunderbolt in my heart. And after that, I began reading Bhagavad Gita again, and immediately I came to this verse, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. You have to become free from attachment, fear, and anger. And in that verse, Prabhupada describes that this fear you have to overcome is the fear of a personal spiritual existence. And he explains how, because we have been conditioned since time immemorial, when you hear of a personal spiritual existence, it can be frightening because you have no reference point for what the spiritual reality is. And then he said, until a point you hear from a pure devotee, you will not be able to understand it. And I could understand that was my fear, and I was able to drop all my fears and just completely embrace everything Srila Prabhupada said. I think we moved in the temple within a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. But something was very profoundly affected by Srila Prabhupada within my heart. And so again, I think we're all looking for that within our hearts, those kind of deep, meaningful realizations. And we're also looking for deep, meaningful association. You read this biography of Narottam Das Thakur about the relationship between Narottam Das Thakur and the Goswamis of Vrindavan and Ramachandra Kaviraj. They had such amazing, deep, heartfelt relationships, something that we all very much hanker for. And it's something which we very need to, I think, strive for. Because sometimes in this world there's a very, very cruel irony that the people we're closest to and the people we actually love the most, we treat most poorly. Isn't that true? Sometimes we become so familiar with those very close to us, we treat them poorly. Why is that? It's actually a victory of Maya. It's actually a victory of Maya. Because Srila Prabhupada, he described once, what was love? And he said, love, no one cares for a dead body. He said, but we care for the body because of the presence of the soul. And he said, why do we care for the soul? He said, we care for the soul because the soul is connected with Krishna. And then he said, why do we care for others? You know, our family, community, society, the world. Why do we care for all these other people? And again, Prabhupada said, because of the presence of the soul. And then Srila Prabhupada said, in this way that love goes to Krishna. That we understand by loving Krishna, we love everyone, but simultaneously by understanding that everyone is a minute part and parcel of Krishna and very dear to Krishna and worthy of all our respect and devotion, that love is going to Krishna when we see that in relationship with Krishna. And then in that conversation, Srila Prabhupada said something very interesting, because we're looking for those kind of heartfelt connections within our families, God-sister to God-sister, God-brother to God-brother. We're looking for those kind of connections. But Srila Prabhupada, he said, the interruption, he said, it's illusion. It's Maya. That sometimes I have a very good friendship with you, but some difference comes between us, and this wall is built between us, and we become separated. And that's the power of Maya, to divide and conquer. So for us to have a very flourishing, a healthy society, healthy grahastha ashrams, healthy brahmachari ashrams, we actually need to pray for that benediction of Lakshmi, that we can have this devotional attitude. We can have that treasure, this pure devotional attitude, to respect and honor everyone with humility and compassion. And then in that way we can have some meaningful relationships on the level of Vaishnavas, devoid of false ego and misunderstandings and quarrel, and which is so prevalent in the age of Kali Yuga. And again, that is actually our duty. We have a duty to become happy. We have a duty to become happy. And I was very much, another thunderbolt for me was I read a conversation in which a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, sometimes Srila Prabhupada, devotees are not happy. Prabhupada's reply was, if he's not happy, he's not devotee. I was shocked by that. I said, what does Prabhupada mean? I'm not happy, I'm not a devotee. And so I understood that to mean, if I'm not feeling happy, I better do something to make others around me happy. Because if I engage in devotional service, then I'll become happy. If I serve others, I'll become happy. It's ironic also, the less you think of yourself and the more you think of the satisfaction of others, the more you actually become happy. So we actually have a duty to become happy by, again, properly imbibing devotional service, which has been gifted to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. So thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So it's maybe time for one or two questions if anyone has a question. Oops.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the lovely class. About midway in your class, you were talking on a subject that I think is really of great interest and importance to all of us, because if we could solve that one, then all other problems would fall into place. And that is chanting the holy name, mm-hmm. and the struggle to control the mind mm-hmm. while chanting. It seems it's part of the struggle that we all have to deal mm-hmm. with. When I'm asked the question, what can I do to help control the mind? I pretty much only have one answer. I'm sure there are many. My answer is the importance of the time of the day when we chant. The Brahma Murta hour is, the mode of goodness is so prominent. And if we chant at that time, go to bed early, rise early, and chant at that time, it's kind of like riding a bicycle, at least on level ground, if not even downhill. But chanting other times of the day when the mode of passion becomes prominent, it's like riding uphill. I was wondering what other answers you might have that may be helpful in that regard to controlling the mind when we chant.
I wish I knew. And what you say is very true, both in terms of the spiritual potency of the Brahma Muhurta hour and also in terms of practicality. Like, we live in this community, Saranagati, and if you chant after sunrise, you immediately see there's so many things that need to be done. whereas when it's dark, we actually like to chant with candlelights, because you don't see everything in the house that needs to be done. But what you say is very true. Very important to chant in the morning and chant attentively. It is the panacea for everything. I think Damodar Maharaj. Is it Damodar Maharaj? Damodar.
I know it's really difficult for me, but I'll be very brief. Here in this temple room, I hadn't come back to Mayapur for 5 years. And I remember 5 or 6 years ago, here in the temple room, another devotee was giving a class related to the challenges of the Grihastha Ashram. And he made an interesting statement. He was quoting someone, I can't tell you exactly, but it was authoritative. And he said that if you see your wife is to serve, if the idea is to serve one another, as you were pointing out, then you will have the goddess of fortune. Your wife will be like the goddess of fortune, or representative of the goddess of fortune in your house. But if your idea is to try to exploit or to enjoy the spouse, the wife in this case, then you'll have Durga Devi living in your house. Something to think of. Maybe you have some comment on that one. I don't know.
I think the submission of the chaste wife, again, it's based upon feeling loved and protected. I think that about Srila Prabhupada. We as disciples of Srila Prabhupada were extremely submissive. We gave up our careers, our money, our cars, everything would just move in these temples packed with devotees. And it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada was giving us edicts that we had to do this or we had to do that, but the experience of all my God brothers and God sisters is that we all felt loved by Srila Prabhupada. Even devotees who didn't have this personal association with Srila Prabhupada, some of Prabhupada's disciples actually didn't personally see Srila Prabhupada, but they felt protected and cared for by Srila Prabhupada. And because all of us felt so much cared for and protected by Srila Prabhupada, we would do anything for Srila Prabhupada. So that submission, it comes as a result of feeling loved and protected. So it's like sometimes the husband wants a wife like Sita, but he doesn't realize he has to become like Ram. So it has to be that balance. It has to be a balance. So 9 o'clock on the button. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.